Hey, everybody, a great conversation with someone who calls herself a leftist, a Marxist. You're going to love this conversation. We have more in common than the media would ever lead you to believe. Batya Ungar Sargun, author of Second Class and also the author of Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. I think you'll love this conversation. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Also, make sure you consider becoming a member. You can listen to all of our episodes advertiser-free at members.charliekirk.com. In addition, the weekly conversation that we have on Friday is only for members. Only members can ask questions. So if you want to ask me a question every Friday, go to members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of The Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Joining us now is one of the most interesting people in media today, and really excited to explore several topics with her. Batya Ungar Sargun, I hope I said that correctly, author of Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed America's Working Men and Women. Batya, welcome to the program.
Charlie, it's such an honor to be here with you. I think that you are one of the most important voices in America today, giving young people an alternative. And so I feel really humbled to be here with you and very excited about the conversation we're going to have.
Well, thank you. I first became aware of you in a dialogue you had with Dennis Prager. And I thought that was awesome. And I think that was like a year and a half ago. So why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? You don't really fit any particular mold. You're a free thinker. You care about the middle class. You have certain views that would definitely resonate with liberals, but some that would resonate more with kind of populist nationalist. Who is Batya Ungar Sargun?
It's such a great question. Okay, I'm actually really curious what you think about this, Charlie. I feel like left and right has become kind of meaningless because to me, being on the left used to mean you stand with the working class and with labor. And it definitely does not mean that anymore. My book, Second Class, is all about how the Democrats especially betrayed the working class and abandoned them, right? But on the other hand, you know, I feel like right used to mean going to war and being on the side of corporations and the rich. And it really doesn't mean that anymore. I think the most interesting thing that's happened is that there's a new center that's kind of opened up. And I think Trump is actually representing that center. I mean, to me, if you just look at his policies, he's the consensus president that President Biden said he was going to be and, ended up instead representing the far left of his flank. So to me, I don't know, left versus right, I find it really hard to say like where I am anymore. I'm still nominally a leftist, but to me, that just means I stand with the working class. I think the American working class it's just like the most amazing, tolerant, kind, warm, wonderful people, and have turned us into the nation that we always wanted to be. And at the same time, the elites have betrayed them in such a big way as to take away their voice and their ability to have themselves represented in a democratic way. What do you think about this, like left versus right? Do you agree with me that these don't really mean?
I think the spectrum's a little messed up. I mean, I would say the spectrum is helpful on certain issues. I mean, for example, like the pro-life, you know, pro-abortion issue, those have remained, you know, firearm ownership. But on neoliberalism, which you highlighted, which as far as representation of the muscular class, immigration policy, and adventurous foreign wars, the spectrum is completely irrelevant now. It is basically the spectrum is now, are you on team oligarchy or are you on team citizen? That's basically the new spectrum. And it's not right versus left. it's really big versus small or up versus down. That's kind of it's somewhat inverted. I would say that the political spectrum is still helpful on social issues, or call it, you know, more cultural issues. But talk more about, you know, the core essence of your book, which is that the American working class, how elites betrayed America's working men and women. Who are the elites? Who are these people that we throw around? Give us some examples of who you consider the elites to be.
Yeah, and this is something also I want to get into with you, because it's very hard for me to talk about them without getting really angry, because the betrayal runs so deep, because they didn't just abandon labor and the working class. What they did was they abandoned them and then called them racist from their perch of immense privilege in order to mask this betrayal, right? And I find that so infuriating and unacceptable, but I'm going to try to say it in a kind of like more calm way. I think before Trump, you really had sort of elites on both sides running the country. So you had the Democratic elites who were catering to this kind of over-credentialed, college-educated set. I mean, it's the people that we always rail against, right? They go to college, they get these super far-left ideas. Their worldview has replaced the difference between right versus wrong with some sort of powerful versus powerless binary. And anyone who they think has less power is inherently virtuous and is beyond reproach and criticism, right? And that's their entire worldview. It's so disastrous. And from that worldview, they have deemed, you know, anybody who disagrees with them to be in the oppressor class and evil. And that includes, of course, all white people, but also any Black or Hispanic people who don't agree with them politically. And they use this ideology as a cudgel to silence political opposition. And the thing I write about in the book is they now, though, have not only immense power culturally, but they created an economy that rewards the knowledge industry in immense ways with the American dream, which they are now hoarding. And if you're working class, you're essentially second class. It's much harder to achieve the American dream. So that's kind of the elites on the left, the professional managerial class, they're often called, the top 10, 20%. Who are hoarding over 50% of the GDP, right? But then on the right, before Trump, you had the kind of, I mean, the people that Nikki Haley represented, right? The kind of like Chamber of Commerce, foreign war intervention, trickle down economics, free trade version of the Republican Party that was very geared towards conservative elites, conservative rich people. And Trump really, he really took an axe to that in a big way. And I really think that there's no going back. I don't know how you see it in terms of the GOP, if they could return to the pre-Trump version, like the way that the donor class is desperate to do. I think that's a fantasy.
Yeah, I tend to agree with a lot of that. And I would say, though, I wouldn't have necessary, you know, complaints if the American ruling class loved the country and they were making a bunch of money and gave it back. It's just, first of all, I think how they've made it is awfully unethical. Secondly, they have contempt for the people, for labor that actually allowed them to make massive amounts of money. And number three, they have no sort of attachment to the body politic or the nation that they currently live in. In fact, they just look at this as a colony, not as a country. There's so much there to unpack. One thing I do want you to emphasize, how dramatic has the oligarchy enriched themselves in the last 4 years, post-lockdowns, cheap money? How rich have the rich become? I know you have some numbers that you can recite here. It is dramatic. It is the most unequal divergence we've seen since the Gilded Era. Is that fair to say?
That is completely fair to say. There's been a massive upward transfer of wealth from the working class to the over-credentialed college elites. It started before the pandemic, but since Joe Biden took office, it's been absolutely on steroids. And every single thing he has done has contributed to this. And often, Charlie, in the name of equity, right? In the name of justice, that's what's so infuriating about it. I'll give you a few examples. Immigration, mass immigration, right? Joe Biden very intentionally opened the border and signaled to people that they should feel free to come here. And they did. And there are now 10 million people who heeded his call. Mass migration is class warfare against the working class. It is an upward transfer of wealth Because, of course, all of those people are competing in jobs that you don't need, you know, a command of the English language, jobs that require physical strength and brawn, working class jobs. And of course, when you add 10 million workers to an industry, you are going to lower the wages of the Americans right there. I mean, of course, spiritually, you're signaling to Americans that these jobs are worthless and meaningless and not worthy of respect and that you have contempt for them, right? But just beyond that, economically, it's just obvious supply and demand. You bring in 10 million people to compete with Americans. The first thing it does is drive down wages. It is class warfare. And the reason I say an upward transfer of wealth is because, you know what, Charlie? These people are all being employed by people who are in the professional managerial class, right? They are the consumers of illegal migrant labor. Upward transfer of wealth from the struggling working class to these people who sit there, these millionaires who sit there on MSNBC and tell you that the economy is doing great because their stock portfolio is doing great. I mean, it's so, so disgusting. I'll give you another example. Student loan forgiveness. Upward transfer of wealth from hardworking Americans straight into the pockets of the college-educated elites. Yes.
How do you feel? Well, I feel great. And one of the reasons I feel better is because I take Balance of Nature's fruit and veggies in a capsule. They have an amazing story of how this product was developed by Dr. Douglas Howard. It's right there on their website. Balance of Nature receives over 1,000 success stories every single month. They've had hundreds of thousands of customers who've purchased billions of capsules of fruits and veggies over the past 20 years, and you should check it all out on their website. Their products are gluten-free and non-GMO, and they contain no added sugars or synthetics. I think if you're looking for something to make you feel better naturally, you should definitely give Balance of Nature a try. In fact, order it today. Whether you order online or call them direct, you must use the promo code CHARLIE to get this special offer of 35% off. Call them at 800-246-8751 or use discount code CHARLIE. Order online at balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE, to get 35% off. So please check it out right now. That is balanceofnature.com, 800-246-8751, promo code CHARLIE. Check it out.
I just wanted to point something out. So in 1971, that was the high watermark for working class wages. They started to stagnate after that. And now they're basically in, you know, in free fall because if you compare, you know, the rate of inflation and everything, people can't afford anything. But so 1971, what was unique about 1971 and why did things start to go south after that? The percentage of the country that was foreign born in 1971, that was not born here, was only 4%. Today, it's 15%. It's actually probably higher because of Joe Biden, because of these 10 million people that he allowed into the country. And so it's at 15%. The last time it was at 15% was in the Gilded Age, which is an age that is known in infamy for the income inequality and the fact that the elites were so rich and everybody else was so poor. We're literally replicating the kinds of inequality we had in the most unequal period in American history. Under the auspices of helping the indigent, but always of other countries, like you pointed out, Charlie.
And it's even worse than that, Batya. And I alluded to this. I mean, Carnegie, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Mellon, they made a bunch of money. But they did love the country. They gave back generously. When asked, they said, I love this country. I will build hospitals. I'll build universities. Back then, they weren't, you know, super woke. Now the elite, Batya, they seem to have a bitterness and a resentment for the nation that made them so rich. Where does that come from?
Yeah, they really hate America. It comes straight out of the university system. It's baked into the worldview that they're taught at university. And I know this because I made the mistake of wasting 7 years of my life and getting a PhD. So I can tell you that, you know, it's true. Not everybody does that. It's true. Not everybody goes to the humanities, but every person who goes to college in America has to take Composition 101. And Composition 101 is taught by an English PhD nincompoop like I used to be. And to get an English PhD, you have to take critical theory. So there's no way to get through the university system, certainly the elite university system, without being exposed to these ideas that America is an inherently and irredeemably racist country, a canard that I absolutely refuse to listen to as a Jewish person who this country has been so good to. It is an absolute canard, but you cannot get through the university system without being taught that America is fundamentally and irredeemably racist and will always remain so. But the thing is, why do they keep perpetuating this canard? It's because it is the perfect smokescreen for the class divide in this country, which is the truth, the real divide, which is that separates them, the elites pushing this nonsense about Israel, about America being a white supremacy. And then that protects them from having the truth seen, which is that they are benefiting from the inequality that they pretend to be fighting.
That is a perfect segue. In fact, you literally took the word I was going to use, which is a theory that I have put out, and so has Tucker and many others, is that the wealthy, they deploy smokescreen grenades of the woke stuff, race, gender, as a distraction to confuse people while they plunder the American middle class, specifically younger Americans. That a lot of this is distraction cultural issues. I'm not saying they're insignificant, because I actually do think they're important. I do think it's important that we could define what a woman is. I think that's actually super important. But it's they want us talking about nothing except that, when in reality, 80 or 90% of the country agrees that we're getting poor and you can't buy a home anymore.
This is what Donald Trump fundamentally understands. His voters don't need him to tell them what values to have. They're good people. They have their own values. They need him to create an economy in which they're not lying in bed at night wondering how they're going to keep a roof over the head of their children. But that is what they need from him. They don't need him to tell them what to think about this cultural issue or that cultural issue. It's nice that he agrees with them, you know? It's nice that he's not insulting their values, right? But they don't need that from him. They need an economy that delivers for the working class. And I think that's why he blew all of the others in the primary out of the water, because they didn't understand this fundamental fact.
A lot of them, they still think that it's a competition of who can rehearse the neoliberal talking points best. Like, that's who gets the GOP nomination. Invade Iran, cut corporate taxes, bring in a bunch of Somalians. American dream and morning is here. Vote for me. It's like, no, actually, that doesn't work anymore. Okay. People, like, we've been deprogrammed. And I would add a fourth to the neoliberal order is mass migration, adventurous foreign wars, and then stupid trade policies. And the fourth, I would say, is an unchecked fourth branch of government owned by the corporate class. As we've all seen over the past few years, the amount of heavy metals, microplastics, and other toxins we are all exposed to has only increased. These are important world issues we must continue to discuss, and since you know that I take my health seriously, I only stand by the best. One company that is aware of these global challenges and that I proudly support is Ascent Nutrition, which has unique health products meant for these times. One I've been using is their pine pollen tincture, which contains 200 nutrients and important components like glutathione and DHEA. Glutathione is known for healthy detoxification and immune support, while DHEA is known as the happiness hormone and supports mood and brain health. Pine pollen is also nature's highest source of special phytohormones, which support hormone function, libido, and adrenal health. I love it because you could truly feel the benefits, and since I am now telling everyone about it, they expect to sell out fast. Before they sell out, click the link in the description below and use the code Kirk to save 10% on your pine pollen tincture and all other products. The book is called Second Class. So, Batya, explain to how you think about the government, which is larger than ever, bigger than ever, but seems to be doing the bidding far too often of corporate America.
It's such a great point. And it's just so great to hear somebody who's so affiliated with the right taking on corporations and corporate America. It's like so important to the working class. One of the things I found when I wrote my book, Second Class, is that working class Americans, they don't hate billionaires. They don't hate millionaires. They often see them as jobs creators, and they really admire their hard work and they admire the work that they've done. But they do feel that siding with corporations is siding against them. And I heard that from many, many conservative Republican voting working class people. They don't feel that being pro-corporation is being pro-them. So I think you're totally right. And what you're pointing to actually answers a big mystery in American society today, which is, why don't the Democrats just control the border, right? It's like such an obvious thing to do. Like everybody wants them to do it. Their own voters want them to do it, you know, to say nothing of that. That was the Democrats' position in the 90s, right? Protect workers, control the border. Fine. Okay. You don't want to be that party anymore. Fine. But it's so obvious that if Joe Biden doesn't get the border under control, that he's going to lose. Why don't they do it? Why don't they just do it? It would be so easy, right? On day one, he undid three executive actions that Trump had done that were 100% successful at controlling the border. And the reason is exactly what you allude to, Charlie, which is that there is a revolving door between Democratic political campaigns, Democratic politics, staffers of Democratic politicians, and then the wide NGO leftist complex that feeds into all of these positions, that writes all of the white papers, that funds the vast majority of this stuff. And the Democrats are truly beholden to them. And indeed, it is so funny and ironic that they say that Trump is a threat to democracy when Trump represents literally turning his back on the donor class in order to represent voters, right? Like the most democratic thing you can do. And of course, they're jealous of that because they could never do that. Joe Biden cannot turn his back on this vast NGO complex because to do so would be to imperil the thing that funds the entire democratic apparatus. So I think you're totally right about that.
So as you have composed and published the book, What have you learned about self-described conservatives, I'll use that term, that has surprised you? You go on a lot of our shows, you spend time around a lot of us. Just what have you learned?
It's so funny because I remember I used to be woke. I used to have the Trump derangement syndrome. And I remember when I first started to see things differently, it was like early in the Trump years, and I was doing a lot of reporting in the South. And I was like, wait a minute. These people are not racist. What's going on? I've been had. I've been lied to. I think the funniest thing I've learned, the most surprising thing, is that I think it's really the way I would put it is the right is the center. Like the people who used to be considered like right wing now often find themselves taking positions that represent the vast majority of Americans. And I think that's true of Trump. And I'll give you just a few examples. Trump is courting trade unions, right? He wants the union vote, right? What a wonderful thing for a Republican to be seeking. 15 weeks for abortion is Trump's position. It's where the Democrats were in the 90s, right? He's courting Black voters. He's doing all this immigration control stuff. Here's an interesting one for you, Charlie. It used to be the Democrats who represented, women's rights, right? Were the side that protected women. And now they're the side representing transgender athletes, literally beating up women, in sports, right? It turns out that the conservatives are the ones who are out here trying to defend women, right? Like it's just there's been this complete reversal as the Democrats shifted far to the left. They left this huge space in the center that I think Trump identified. But so, okay, this is something I wanted to ask you about because, okay, something that I struggle with is really saying, I want to speak to every single person who's in that 70% in the center. And keeping as wide a lane as possible so that I can speak to and for the people who don't get represented usually because of the elites on both sides. So I guess my question to you is, do you find yourself ever sort of choosing between speaking to that broad consensus and then the desire to sort of own the libs who desperately need to be owned? I totally agree. But is that a tension in your mind?
No, I mean, again, you just tell the truth. And what I find, last evening, for example, we had, 1,300 students at the event. I don't know if everyone agreed to everything I said, but people want plainly spoken truth, not pandering towards their sensitivities. And I think Trump is a great example of this. And even Obama, to be perfectly honest, back in 2008 originally, which is authenticity. What is your vision for the country? And if you can defend it rationally and you could defend it reasonably, I think that wins consensus. But politics is now really about building your base, expanding beyond your base by micro coalitions. And let's just be honest, the institutions have gone so far to the left they've gone so out of whack. And my points, and people laugh when I say this, my points are actually super normal and centrist. So for example, it might look like I'm owning the lib last night. You know what my position was? That there's only male and female in the human species. And he said that I'm a hater. Because I said there's only male and female in the human species. That it's not an opinion, it's a biological fact, right? And so, I mean, I have a book coming out called Right Wing Revolution, which actually my contention is that the only way to get back to a moderate and prudent center is through a right wing revolution, because we've been so yoked in the cultural Marxist direction. And so that's kind of that's my response to it. And I've also found, though, that even moderate young people and students especially, they need to hear the conservative position, because they've never actually maybe even heard it. They might have heard like a watered down, pandered to type opinion. So the vast majority of my exchanges are really, you know, I think they're really moderate, to be perfectly honest.
I totally agree with everything you just said. I also think most of your opinions are very moderate. Here's an interesting thing. 70% of Black Americans agree with your position on gender. They totally reject the idea that a person can be born in the wrong gender. I guess what I would want is for every single one of them to feel that they have an alternative. And let's take, for example, the MLK thing, right? I totally get where you were going with that. But what if there is a Black person who's out there and says, I am carefully paying attention to the GOP, to the right, to see, can I have a home there? Because I'm not buying this trans stuff. I don't want my kid exposed to it. What if that could be a deal breaker for them? Isn't it worth keeping people like that in mind? What do you think?
I mean, you're going to win and lose people. I don't look at it that way. I mean, I'll be honest. I got more response from Black Americans who loved this. I mean, we have Blexit, which is the largest minority outreach program in the conservative movement, by far, doing hundreds of urban and Black outreach events. And they loved it.
It's incredible.
So
it was great.
Yeah. So I guess my question for you is, do you still dialogue with people on the left? Do you still dialogue with like traditional wokies? What do they think of you now?
I still have about two or three. Ironically, one is Palestinian. We're very close. And even though we really disagree on Israel and really disagree on everything else, a lot of them really hate me now. I was denounced publicly by people who are very, very close friends, which is a very painful thing to happen. And it just never ended. At each stage, Charlie, I would be like, surely all the people who are my friends who are going to publicly denounce me have already done so. But no! There was always another one. So there are not many, I would say, but only by their choice. Of course, as an opinion editor at a publication, Newsweek, where we run both sides, I have people who write for me who I respect very much, who are very much on the woke left. But it's hard to keep them. But even if you want them, because I like having people who I disagree with, it keeps me honest, but they won't stay. You know, they don't like you said, Charlie, they don't like hearing the other side.
So, you know, you have a PhD in English, is that right? So you've been around a lot of the wokies. Can you help me understand why the woke revolutionaries, they show no signs of stopping down despite the destruction that their worldview has brought to the homeland?
But don't you think that it's becoming clearer? Like, I think it's no one's falling for it anymore, right? Like, it does seem like you're right. They are still invested in it. But the support for it is just like cratering, which, you know, by the grace of God, I have to say, because in 2020, I didn't see that ending so quickly. They're deeply invested in it because they're invested in it economically. So I see it going that way, that they are deeply invested in it economically. It has placed them in the top 10% economically and had a ruinous effect on the working class. And they then created an ideology of justice to justify their ascent, basically. And once you have a mortgage, it's much harder to then change your mind about something, especially if you know you'll never get a job if you do change your mind. So it's this sort of amalgamation of getting high on their own virtue, being able to call their political opponents evil and racist, which they get high on that as well, and then being completely economically invested in this worldview. And like you pointed out, it's at the corporate level, it's at the government level, right? So many jobs are invested in this, and the jobs pay so well. I mean, $160,000, $200,000 a year for these DEI positions, right? It's hard to turn your back on that.
That is true. It is awfully lucrative to call people racist all day long and make sure the people are using the right pronouns. It is the new SS. The new SS is well paid as HR department managers at Goldman Sachs. The world is in flames and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster. But it can't and won't ruin my day. Why? Because I start my day with a hot America First cup of blackout coffee. It's 100% America and 0% grift. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values. From sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping, they embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. Look, you got to check out right now, blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie, or use coupon code Charlie for 20% off your first order. That is blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Be awake, not woke. That's blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Check it out, promo code Charlie. I want Baccia to hear this. This is an example of me not pandering, but I think winning people over in a way. Let's play cut 36 of a clip that is now going viral from last evening. Can we play cut 36, please?
I have no problem if somebody has mental problems in their living room alone. So be it. Dress as Cinderella, dress as a wolf. Not the problem. The issue is when you storm the HR department and say, Sam used the wrong pronouns, and I think they should be disciplined for that. And now we all have to use these pronoun markers in our bio to cater to a fringe minority that's so fragile, that is so weak, that you can't possibly tolerate the idea of somebody mispronouncing you or misgendering. Like, grow up. Like, welcome to civil, mature adult society. Sometimes, how about you go be strong enough to go confront the other person and say, use my own pronouns. But no, at the root of the LGBT movement, the T stands for tyranny. And it's, you have to use my pronouns. You have to allow me to teach your children transgender pornography. You have to allow me to allow myself into your life. It is not live and let live. At the root of trans ideology is live and let us rule. And we are currently living under the enemy occupation of the trans zealots. That if you misgender somebody, you could lose your entire career. That if you drive over a pride flag, it is a hate crime punished by the Department of Justice. But if you burn an American flag, they call it free speech. We have an entire month that is dedicated towards protecting LGBTQ pride. It's not live and let live. If it was, then they would do their own thing, we'd do our own thing. Instead, it is a grooming, proselytizing strategy of people that need to recruit because they can't reproduce.
Okay, I want to talk about how woke media is undermining democracy. Baccia, tell us about your book there.
Absolutely. First of all, I just want to say about the clip that you just played. I don't know if your audience understands what you do, because I could not do it and I admire it so much. But you go into hostile territory and just take on person after person after person. And it's just so important. And no one does it anymore. People are too scared to do it. They don't have the confidence. And they don't believe that they can be convincing. So, like, massive kudos to you.
Thank you.
Like, there's three places left in America where debate still exists, and you're, like, single-handedly holding one of those.
Well,
so
thank you. That's very kind.
I so admire that. And also, I totally agree with you. The pronouns thing is not about dignity. It's not about civil rights. It's about power. It's about children having power over their elders and being able to say, you used the wrong word. I have the power. And that is an abomination.
Yes.
Children should not be allowed to yell at grown-ups. When did we become a country
I
where,
totally
like, that
agree.
Was basically, like, the bedrock of our, there's such a disgusting worship of the young happening on the left, and I absolutely, it's so gross to me. So thank you for pointing that out, because
very
nobody ever
deep
mentions
point.
That.
No, and by the way, that is a very good way to put it. Another way to put it is they don't believe in childhood anymore. They if you look at, for example, they're indicting these mm-hmm. kids in Massachusetts for their group text messages. You can get surgery. You could do it. This idea of child and innocence, they don't believe in the distinction of the adult-child distinction. But please tell us about your book, Baccia, in addition to Second Class. Tell us about
yes.
it. We're running out of time.
Yes. Thank you so much, Charlie. My first book was called Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. And it's a little bit of a prelude to Second Class. Basically, what I found there was that the real divide in America is not between right versus left. It's between the working class and the elites. Our media is terrible, not because it's leftist, although it is leftist. It's terrible because the vast majority of journalists today have a degree from an elite university. Yeah. And the number one thing they teach at those universities is to sneer at people who work with their hands for a living. That explains everything about the media. And it explains why they're waging war on Donald Trump and trying to put him in prison, because he speaks for the people who work with their hands for a living, for hardworking Americans who are just struggling to get the American dream.
Yeah, and I want to mention something you said earlier. You said it was really refreshing to have conservatives speak against corporations. 5 or 6 years ago, I wouldn't have, and Tucker was very important in my education on this. But we as conservatives don't like consolidated, unchecked power. So we don't like big government or big Google. And so it's consistent. And so I guess the final question I have for you, Batya, is what do you think is the way forward to build a multilingual, multiracial working class coalition to take back our country from the oligarchy that's currently terrorizing it?
The American working class is very united in its views on what it wants to see from a policy point of view. Whether a working class person is a liberal or a conservative, they by and large want the same things. So they really don't like welfare because they think it comes at their expense. Yeah. But they also don't like corporations. They want to see people siding with workers over corporations. They want a total moratorium on immigration, but they want some sort of government-backed healthcare, which they don't see as welfare. They hate that they feel they can't afford good healthcare. They are anti-woke, which they think is deeply, deeply intolerant. They're very worried about trans people, but they're pro-gay. They say they would never get an abortion themselves, but they don't like abortion bans. This is the key. Any person who came out with this exact policy agenda would get an immediate 60% of the vote. The problem is that one party talks about healthcare but wants an open border. The other party will never talk about healthcare but is controlling the border. So for working class people, there's no party for them, really. Trump comes very, very close to being the perfect candidate. And it's because he's a protectionist. These people are socially conservative, but they want the government to protect their labor. They want the dignity that comes with working hard and getting paid a fair wage.
Yes, and not being Russian serfs, where you are constantly renting and controlled by the regime. Batya, great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie. God bless you.
I love free thinkers. You see, if people were like that might disagree on certain things, we'd be a fine country. We'd be fine. That's how America used to be. We need that country back. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.